Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we're giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. You loved the live show episode, but you wanted a little bit more. Here are the questions, direct from the mic into our ears and iPhones. Again, apologies about the sound quality. Here is the Q&A section of our live episode at Sawhorse Productions.
So, Tim, you were saying that when you have a shadow, you like a lot of collaboration. Like, you like to speak with that person. How was your shadowing experience different? Like, I'm wondering if it's more expected for the shadows to be flies on the wall and be seen but not heard, or if, in your experience, you've really been able to kind of dig in and chat with the directors and really be a part of the learning process.
I mean, for me, it's been interesting because, again, I've been directing for 10 years now, and I've never really had done a shadow. So I think for the most part, and for a lot of people that I've talked to, it's like you're a fly on the wall, and you know, if you're shadowing on something big, you're not chiming in. And if you have a cool director, then yeah, maybe they're having you be more a part of the process. And then the director that I shadowed on Crashing was Gillian Robespierre, who did Obvious Child, and she was lovely. It was also interesting because I've done a lot of directing, so she wasn't like explaining things to me. It was just more I was there to see how that show worked. So I think it just kind of depends, but you really should feel it out, and it should be like you're a fly on the wall unless you get invited, right, or you're asked a question, I think, too. But then be prepared to like chime in and like feel like, oh, yeah, I have the answers, or like they might be like, what would you do? Like, you know, so just be prepared, but I wouldn't muscle my way in there.
I shadowed Fresh Off the Boat a couple of years ago, and I didn't know the director really well, but he was very nice and lovely, but yeah, I was a fly on the wall in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the people that have shadowed me have been people that I kind of know, kind of work with, so it probably is a somewhat different dynamic than if it was something I completely didn't know, but yeah.
You know what's also interesting is, like, so on Kimmel, we've had a few students come and shadow, and the other directors, they're usually like, oh, go be with Boreen, because I feel like they'll like, oh, she'll have more patience with you or something. So when I've had somebody come, it's just like, oh, let me just like be a normal person and like tell you all this stuff, because it can be really awkward. It's like so weird just to be like, I'm just here.
Right.
Yeah, you have zero job to do.
Cool. Yeah, the context of that question is the person that asked it is my wife. And I had a really weird shadowing experience where I should have been more of a fly on the wall. I'll just leave it at that. Any other questions? Let's go all the way to the back. Then we'll work our way to the front. By the way, we have some awesome people in the audience tonight. A lot of them have worked with Matt and me. And so you guys should all talk to each other afterwards. It's a lot of really...
I talked to a listener earlier who got a job based off of meeting someone at the last show.
Oh, cool. So yeah,
that's
half the people in this room.
That's what everybody's doing here.
Yes. Free jobs.
Oh, well, that sounds awesome. I just finished college, like, literally today.
Whoa! All right!
My directing professor's advice to us was that immediately post-grad, it doesn't matter what you do, you should just direct. direct anything that you can because it won't hurt you and it won't hurt your career. So what's your advice on like directing shitty scripts or getting linked to projects that are like not great? Is it worth the practice or should you try and stay away from it?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, make shitty stuff for sure. That's good advice. But you can't go into it thinking it's shitty. You have to think it's going to be great, and then you're going to be wrong. It's going to be terrible. But the next one's going to be great. And then you got to see what was bad about what you just did, but then there's going to be some things that you did really well and enjoy those wins and build on those and then look at what your weaknesses are. And build on those. But your professor is giving you good advice, but just don't go in trying to fail. Go in with the delusion that everybody else is going to come out making shitty stuff, but I'm going to make great stuff.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people get stifled by like being like, I can't make mistakes, or like, so then they don't do anything. And it's like, yeah, you're going to fail. And the more I took more chances probably when I was younger and wasn't afraid to fail.
But I think I'm 100% sure that everyone up here has had this experience where someone emails you or calls you and says like, hey, you're a director and I'd love to have you maybe direct something. It's financed and we're ready to go. Can I meet you? Can I see your samples? You talk to them, you get to know them, everything. You're like super stoked on this directing job that just came to you, and then they send you the script and you're like, this is awful. And it's like, that's when you have to decide, you know, I think, what was your name again?
Oh, I didn't say it. Oh.
Brittany was asking, like, do you just direct it even though you hate it? And my answer is, like, you tell them, look, I love this idea. I have some ways that I think can make it, like, really sing, you know? And if they are into it, then they are. And if they're not, then you wait for the next.
And that's a good way to practice that muscle, too, to look at something that is shitty and be like, how can I make this better?
But you never want to live a lie. I think that won't work. And it's not a good way to build relationships, too. Like, I think, to your point, you really have to find a way to love whatever you're doing, or you just won't be exercising your muscle in the right way.
Yeah, if it hurts your heart to read it, probably don't do it. But, like, if there's, like, you know, if there's a scene you really love, or if there's, like, a couple things where, like, I feel like this, at least, I can take this and put it on my reel, like, make as much stuff as you can in the beginning, and then years down the road when you feel like you have your voice, like, start to make the right stuff. And
by the way, it's even worse for actors because they will just be like, oh, I love this script, and it's like they hate it doesn't make any sense, but they just do it. But at least it's only like a day or two, you know. Cool, any other questions? Should we go over to Marshall?
Hey, another recent graduate, but got to the city, got a job real quick, and it's safe, but it's not what I want to be doing. It's in the industry, but it's very adjacent. So when is it time to strap in for the long term and build the relationships? And when should you let the fire drive what you're going to do and start taking the big risks?
It's like, that's basically the kind of like my job is that when I first came to LA, I came and I had great, like an internship on CSI, and I worked on an Alexander Payne movie, and I was like, this is going to be great, I'm going to get a job. And then the writer's strike happened. It was like in 2007, so there were no jobs. So I got a job working behind the counter at Sprinkles, and then I was also doing PA work. And what I personally decided to do was stop doing PA things, work at Sprinkles, and just be like, I'm always going to be making my own stuff and fighting my way in. So, and that's when people were like, that's not a good idea because you're not working your way up. And I think it depends on if you want to direct, then you don't necessarily need to be a PA, or, you know, you just go make stuff and write stuff and figure out a way to do that. So it kind of is like when you think it's, you know, time to like do that.
I also think as a recent grad, we touched on this earlier, but you have this unique opportunity where you probably know talented people that you went to school with, and it's not unreasonable to say, hey, can you shoot this for free? And can you work for free? And all of these people that I did this with straight out of film school, now they're all getting paid, and it would be really tough for me to say, hey, can you spend all this money and ask for favor rates from all these people for something that's not going to pay? So you have this flexibility right now where I don't know how good your job that you just got is, but if you're really accustomed to a certain comfort, like that can be trapping. And it was so nice to just like live in borderline poverty, and just everybody would come and try to hustle. And I think you're in a real sweet spot. And that's not to be too I don't want to discourage anybody who's 35 and wants to jump out of the rat race, but I feel like that's much more difficult, because then you have to find, where do you find those peers? Where do you find these talented people to jump in with? So I would capitalize on it.
Cool, yeah. And obviously do both. Do your job and do, it's like what Maureen's doing. By the way, Maureen, everyone on here's episode is really amazing, but Maureen goes really in depth into that story of like behind the counter at Sprinkles to Kimmel. Cool, and next question, Allie?
Hi, yeah, my question is about the creative process. How do you, if you have like a lot of notes for an end, how do you like maintain a great relationship, get them excited about these notes being a short amount of time?
I've got this one actually. Evan Kosbar, of Sawhorse fame, one of the three guys here, has a process called build, break, build, right? Or you've heard of it as the compliment sandwich. Right, so tell them, like, these are the things I really like, and maybe it's, you know, like a deli sandwich, and there's a lot of meat in the middle, right? but, like, be genuine, but, like, tell them up top what you really, really like, and then, you know, just be kind but straightforward and be specific. Do you know what I mean? Like, a wishy-washy note is the thing that an editor hates. I see Andy Young nodding. Like, but if you're like, hey, I don't like this thing, let's fix it, that's a lot easier for them to deal with. And then tell them that you love it at the end.
Yeah, I always start with like a pros list. I pretty much every notes email I've ever sent starts out with like, amazing first cut. and I don't know if that's like a backhanded insult or not, but it's like what, yeah, like sometimes it's more about the amazing and sometimes it's more about the first.
I have this thing with Sarah, who edited my two features, we called it Shits and Giggles. So like any, because we fought a lot, but that's also why I liked working with her, because she was really passionate. But anytime she didn't want to do something, I'd be like, just Shits and Giggles. It's like, you have to do whatever, whatever. It's like let's try just try it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That is a good thing. Like, just try it. And a lot of times you're wrong. Like, you're like, well, we just cut to this and this and this and this. And then you're like, oh, this doesn't make any more sense than it was before.
I've found that that's a really good way to make rapport with an editor too, is just like, hey, let's try this. I think this could work. And then we spend 10 minutes trying something. And then if you're the person who goes like, nah, it was stupid, wasn't it? Nah, you were right. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of thing like, hey, we're in this together. We're all, I don't know any better than you, but this is just an idea and we're in this together. I think that makes any note that they hate a little bit more palatable.
I can tell you what they don't like, which is when you're like, can I just sit here for a second and use the keyboard?
Don't do that.
I got to do that on Hannah.
Yeah,
I had such a beautiful relationship with my editor, Morton. He, I think it was more annoying for him to have me like right behind him and be like, now, okay, now, and then this bit, and this bit. And so like I just got my own little station, and it was this wonderful collaborative relationship. We had two stations, and it was so wonderful and collaborative because I could do the shits and giggles, try things, work on a sequence, and he tries things, work on a sequence, and then we'd watch each other's stuff and talk about it, and it felt like having a writing partner, actually. It was just, like, so wonderful, and it was all based on just, like, brutal honesty and may the best idea win, and anything's possible, and we can always try things. And
if you can, too, I mean, I would recommend, you know, download Adobe Premiere, spend, the, you know, $10 for a couple months, and just, like, edit a couple things you shoot on your iPhone, and, like, just understand what all the tools are called, and I think that just helps your shorthand with your editor to be like, roll this clip back, like, you know, two seconds, and like they I think they like that you have a respect for like what their kind of their language is. And
what does that mean to you, roll the clip back 2 seconds?
Yeah, I know.
You're basically taking the edit point and you're moving it back like 10, you know, moving it back however far you want to move it back without changing the actual timing of.
But are you changing the shot before it 2 seconds shorter?
You're shortening the A shot by 2 seconds, and you're lengthening the head of the B shot by 2 seconds.
That's what
and
I
And then slip is moving it, slip but it. Like keeping the
shot direction.
Yeah. So what's slide?
What's what?
Sliding. Slide that clip over four frames.
I don't know what sliding is.
That's like, I feel like you move the pick, like. It would move like all of the stuff.
It's a double roll, I think.
Yeah.
Next question. Next down.
Hi, I'm Desi. For American Vandal, you have such specific actors and characters, like they need to feel young and be in high school, but they're also very funny, but then it's like a drama, and subtle drama, but then it's fucking hysterical. So I'm wondering, like, how did you decide which actors you wanted? Were they really playing themselves? Because like Dylan Maxwell, I mean, I feel like he's like just that dude. and also, did you work with them on set differently to make it drama, but funny drama?
Well, I think, thank you, first of all. And that's a layered question, so I'll try to be as quick as possible. But we just sort of set a tone for us making this like a documentary, and all of the actors that we brought in, we made it like, okay, this is the most important crime in the history of Hanover High School or St. Bonaventure High School. And that applied to the cinematographer, to the writer's room, and it just kind of trickled down philosophically. So that was never really something that had to be hammered into people. I think in terms of casting, for this show and doing especially something in the doc space, I was less interested in trying to find the Daniel Day-Lewis or Gary Oldman who just completely transformed into somebody. But there was plenty of room for a talented actor to come and change the role a good deal from what I was imagining. Like, I didn't imagine really Jimmy Tatro as like a skinnier, dumber SoCal guy, kind of like a Kyle Mooney type was originally how we imagined it. And then he brought his own version. Like, okay, let's steer to that. We would rewrite a little bit. And so I think that's kind of the philosophy, is just like, reading a lot of people and being open-minded, and if you see somebody bringing truth to the role and like, yeah, I knew that guy in high school, then you just go to it and then play to their strengths, and instead of trying to fit them into the box of a certain joke or punchline that you had in the original script, you let them take it and make it their own.
Cool. Any other questions? Let's do a couple more. We'll do two. Can we do three more questions?
Two more questions.
You, and then Dave.
Hi, Danny.
Hey,
this is awesome. With such tight deadlines and like huge stakes, how do you deal with stress? And how do you not like second guess the decisions that you make on set or in pre-pro with really tight deadlines?
I feel like, personally, sometimes working on Kimmel, I feel like when I first started, I'm like, it's kind of like when you, I don't like really like flying, so it's like, I'm gonna die today. Like, you get on a plane, and you're like, I might crash, and that's okay, and that's the only way I can, like, get on a plane. So it's kind of like the same thing, you're like, I could get fired today, but that's okay. Like, and that's, like, honestly, like, how I dealt with, like, a lot of the stress at the beginning of that job.
You just surrendered to it.
I was just like, if I get fired today, I get fired today. Like, if I fuck something up and I don't make the deadline of the show, then, okay, I'll, you know.
Yeah. I think we all are really stressed out when we're on projects, right?
Yeah.
Like, even Tim, probably, when you're doing your 14th episode of Adam Ruins Everything, you're still probably like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
This motion control thing was not worth the money.
I'm constantly just, like, screaming inside at lunch every day when I need to cut like 12 shots because we can't make our day. But I think to answer your question, I think just doing it over and over again, it just gets easier every time. So I think, you know, the first time I'm always working with a new client or a new show, it's like I'm terrified inside the first day I'm doing it, but then it's like I survive, they ask me back, and then it's like, oh, okay, they like me, they want me here for a reason, so. You know, those jitters kind of go away.
You'll find yourself ready to punch a wall, and then you just think, what would Matt Enlow do?
Repress it all.
I think I had my very first panic attack recently in the Heathrow airport. I thought I was having a heart attack, and I was sure I was going to die. And I was like, oh, this is how it ends, like here, alone. and I realized now, like, I love this work and I want to continue doing it and hopefully live. And I've realized that I need to deal with stress better, actually. I'm not good at it and I shouldn't. And I will admit that, like, it's not even so much that I'm on set, I feel very peaceful and very calm, actually. It's where I feel maybe the least stressed. But at the end of the day, and you're thinking about what's next, or you just can't turn the adrenaline off to, like, get the sleep that you know your body needs for the next day. And so I, you know, would develop bad habits of, like, oh, I have to drink 3 glasses of wine because it's medical. And then I would be, you know, and then the next day drinking, I got in the habit of drinking these little 5-hour energy bottles that you get at like 7-Eleven that are amazing. And like, I got a little addicted to. But like, that's all really bad habits. And like, that can't sustain you in the long run. So now I'm doing yoga. And I'll let you know how that goes. Ask me again.
That happened actually on my second feature. The same thing as you, like, on set, great. And then I had a health scare where I went to the emergency room with a kidney infection. And, like, you do have a kidney infection, but your blood pressure is so high you could have a stroke. Yeah. And they were like, are you stressed out? And I was like, no. Like, that's just how I function. And so I was like, yeah, you have to just, like, sometimes meditate and, like, but I really love that, like, energy of, like, a million things. Like, it doesn't feel stressful, but...
And in fact, it's addictive. Yeah. It's actually really addictive. And then when you rap, you actually are in danger of depression because you're so used to that hit of that, like, adrenaline.
I call it show crash.
Yeah.
You definitely actually get depressed afterwards, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So self-care. Just, like, work on some
wellness.
Self-care. Yeah.
Okay, we had another question over here.
Hey, guys. So I work as a commercial PP. And that's been going really well. Just had like a big Payless campaign that did well, but
it wasn't the ones with
awesome.
Which one?
They tricked a bunch of influencers into thinking that Polisi was this like high end brand, but it was actually Payless.
So the whole thing in Santa Monica.
Tara, return my Polisi shoes, please.
But so that's all going really well. I want to do more narrative work. I've done 3 features, but it's also like I know so many producers and not a ton of directors, and in the feature world it's directors that get more features. But going back to, you know, what you were saying about being young and can do stuff for free, I also can't do that, right? Mm-hmm. It's like I've told friends, yeah, I can do your short, but like you have to call me the day before. Because I, if I get a call from Acura, I can't turn that down, right? I don't know if you guys have any advice for me on picking DPs. When would you change a DP or look for a new DP?
Yeah, I mean, if you turned down that Acura job and we shot a short together, I would owe you. And we would have history. And I think that's really the thing, right? Is having history with somebody is the way to know whether or not you want to continue working with them. And I think maybe on a short-term job, maybe it's as simple as turning down some, it sounds like, awesome opportunities every once in a while to make a crappy short, maybe. You know, but that's the worst case scenario, right?
Or you make like a badass commercial and you're like, hey, you know, I've just shot this Payless spot and it's doing really well, just like how actors do it. Like, hey, I just did this short, or I just did this. I'm sure all of you guys get emails from DPs saying like, hey, I'm a fan, like check out my reel. And like on a project, if like I'm looking for like a car person or someone that's amazing with kids or someone that's done anamorphic Lomo lens, whatever, and the client like wants someone with experience, I'll look at those things if they happen to have just gotten into my inbox. So yeah, but mostly I think if you listen to Just Shoot It, you'll get all the answers.
I really agree what Matt said. I would amend it a little bit, but it's probably nothing that you don't already know. It would just be like, instead of for making a shitty short, it's like, if you're turning down an accurate job, you got to be really selective, and you're like, I really believe in this director, so I'm gonna turn down $6,000 for him or her because I feel like it can pay in the long run, and I'm not discounting what a leap that is to make, but sometimes just being like really calculated, like I really believe in this script and I like his previous work and I think we share a similar sensibility, and that is the type of flyer to make.
Negotiate with a person too, like you're probably not getting an awesome phone call in between Christmas and New Year's. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like maybe being a little more strategic that way is helpful.
I think if there's some way you can be reading scripts and fall in love with a project early and make an early relationship and even then volunteer your time, like, hey, if you wanted to do a proof of concept with this, I think that could be wise.
That's probably the best advice, I think.
Yeah.
That would work on me. Okay, cool.
Also, everyone needs someone to read their scripts.
Yeah. So we'll all be hanging out here and drinking and stuff afterwards, so everyone can ask more questions. But for our final question, I introduce, ladies and gentlemen, David Stanbra. He's going to be on an HBO show also. Am I allowed to say? It's going to be on the Leftovers. The new season of Leftovers. Just kidding. True Detective. True Detective. Yeah. What is your question? It better be good.
If you had to choose a breakfast sandwich, no, I'm just kidding. So it seems like as you progress through your career as a director, you're constantly encountering a first. So my question is, when you encounter something that technically you don't have, say, the expertise or the experience doing, whether that be like a large action sequence, or perhaps you're switching genres, what do you recommend for bridging the gap between your knowledge to what you need to be? So do you like to research other films, or do you have mentors that you consult? If you encounter a technical issue that you're not familiar with, or that's a first for you, how do you go about bridging that gap?
I honestly, like, one of the things I get from our podcast is I meet so many directors, and I'll just, like, email one of them. I even, like, emailed Eric Kissack, a friend of mine who did this commercial that I really liked, and I was pitching, like, a really similar, like, look, art direction to something he had done. I was like, can you just show me, like, what you wrote in your treatment for your art direction? And he sent it to me. I was like, do you mind if I just, like, copy and paste this into my treatment? Because it's kind of perfect. I, like, talked about how, like, a room should feel lived in and the objects on the shelves should feel like they belong to the people there, which, like, it totally does not matter and makes no difference, like, in a 4-second shot in a commercial. But I just, like, loved how he talked about that. And so Blake and I, we send each other treatments all the time because it's like real, you know, you just gotta learn from each other. So yeah, I think if I need a motion control thing, I'll call Tim.
Tim, how did you learn to do motion control?
Honestly, it was just like a tool I knew existed that I wanted to use, and it just, the perfect project came up for Kyle Chumer, where we knew we wanted split screen, like, you know, like a good scenario and a bad scenario type commercial. And I was like, you know, it'd be really cool to, like, use this gear to, you know, do this very specific shot. And I just hired a DP, and I was like, hey, I want to figure out how to do this. I've never used it, so I'm really going to lean on you to, like, you know it, and if you don't know it, figure out someone that, like, knows how to use it. And I kind of, you know, you're just going to lean on the department of whatever technical issue that has to involve. I also think the good thing is that, you know, if you're doing some kind of, you know, big action-y thing, you know, there's probably a behind the scenes of a scene of a movie on YouTube for free that you can, like, just watch and be like, oh, like, that's where they placed that camera, that was the piece of gear they used, or that was actually green screen, that whole backdrop was actually not even really there.
Well, cool. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks to Sarah, Maureen, Tim, and Tony. Can we get another one? Well, thanks. Hang out. Feel free to chat with us. Yeah. And thanks you so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
And there you have it, folks. That was the Q&A section of our live episode. We hope you enjoyed it, and let us know what you think. If you missed it and you are interested in coming to a live episode in the future, let us know, and we will keep putting them on. They're actually really fun.
They're super fun. Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Catch you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.